Welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson, and today we're proving that no matter the odds, resilience rewrites the story. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson. And on this show, we spotlight the fighters, the dreamers, the builders, the people who were underestimated, overlooked, or counted out, but refused to quit. Today, I am joined by Austin Park, founder of Visual Installations. His story begins with a hands-on commitment to precision and hard work and has grown into a nationwide installation company serving major retailers, restaurants, banks, iconic brands, and project partners across the United States and Canada. Austin, welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you guys.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear more. So tell me how you got started. What was your thought process for Visual Installations?
It was very much by accident, if I'm being totally honest. I grew up in backwoods Tennessee, and I was always been pretty good with my hands. Even though I've had tons of heart issues and other things, I spent a lot of time in the hospital. I still had to pull my weight around the farm. So thankfully, I was good with my hands, and I was helping somebody do some of these installs, you know, when I was super young, but then just never clung on to it. And that same guy a few years later asked for some help on something, and I didn't even know I was getting paid. He just asked me if I would go take some graphics off a window. And I said, yeah, because it was next to one of my favorite fishing spots. So I went and did the removal. And while I was fishing, he sent me a PO, which at the time I didn't even know what a PO was. And that PO was worth more than a whole week of construction, which is what I was doing at the time. And so I was like, hey, you got any more of this? And he's like, yeah, are you okay to travel? And I was like, absolutely. And so, yeah, then about 6 months on the road all over the United States doing signs and graphics. It was wild.
So that's what your company, you put up graphics on windows, marquees, things of that nature, and then you remove them if a client wants them removed?
Yeah. It's your window graphics, wall graphics. You could have a whole mural put up along the whole back wall of somebody's sign shop or somebody's shop. You could have hanging signs, you know, like aisle markers, all kinds of different signage for events, retail stores, hotel chains, banks, whatever it is, whatever new sale somebody's laying out, we roll it out for them. They could have hundreds or thousands of locations, all over the United States and Canada. And we put it up for them.
So tell me, what's the heart of your story? Like, tell me the young Austin that led to the Austin that has a company that works all across the United States and in Canada.
That's a long one, but essentially I grew up with a lot of health issues. I was in the hospital a lot. I had multiple open heart surgeries. I've had, multiple, smaller, minor surgeries, but I've spent a lot of time in and out of the hospital, and, I was told no a lot, which is not a word I'm really fond of. I was put, a lot of limits were placed on the things that I did. So I was not allowed to like play sports with my friends. I spent a lot of time more playing chess or doing archery, which I love even to this day. I bow hunt and I really enjoy it, but I did not like not being able to, like, even when we played softball or baseball, if they let me hit, it was so someone else could run for me, or I had to play some position that didn't require any running. And even when we went and did things together, like whitewater rafting, the guides would naturally see the scar on my chest and the one along my back, or just that I was the smaller, skinnier kid, and they'd make me sit in the back with them just to keep an eye on me and things like that. And so obviously that would naturally put a chip on anybody's shoulder of constantly being told no and deciding to go against the grain. So I've always kind of been the square peg and round hole, will you say? Is that what you say? And I had an open heart surgery when I was 15, another one when I was 18 and 19. And after that, things kind of are okay for the moment. And I'll have to get it again probably in the next 3 to 5 years. But I had a good 20-year run on this particular heart valve that allowed me to do a whole lot of things. I've been to 17 countries. I've worked humanitarian work overseas in multiple third world countries. And I've built this business and traveled all over the place. And, I don't really take no for an answer nowadays.
Yeah, why would you? You've beat the odds, right? Like everybody already told you no. So what can they tell you at this point? And so when you decided this journey of entrepreneurship, did you have any idea what it would entail for your life or what you would be able to prove to everybody?
I don't know. I looking back, I would say to a degree, because even before I started this business journey, I was reading books and listening to podcasts. I'm more of an athlete person than I am a sports team person. I don't really follow sports except for my brother plays semi-pro soccer. So I'm familiar with World Cup and I watch the CrossFit games nowadays. But I've always liked looking into people like Michael Jordan and then his trainer, Tim Grover, and just learning about what it took for them to get there. It's a good direction, or it at least tells you what it's going to cost you. And so I knew that it was going to cost a lot. And even though I'm so far from where they are and so far from my own potential, even to this day, I knew that it was going to be hard and lonely. That is a very constant when it comes to hearing anybody's journey in the business world or in a high achievers world. So many people will not be understood. And I was okay with that because I already felt not understood when it came to just being the weird one. I was okay with that. Nothing can fully prepare you for it. No matter how many podcasts or books you read, there's no way to know exactly what it's going to cost and how much effort goes into it and how lonely it gets. It gets extremely lonely. And a lot of people don't understand that. It is also extremely fulfilling. So I don't want to just gloss over just the bad stuff. It's extremely fulfilling. I love to work hard. It is a very satisfying thing to finish complete an install or to build a business or complete a project that goes a long way, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Like I think I was the weird one for many years too. So it's like, people don't understand. They don't understand the drive. They don't understand, turning down invitations to family functions and this, because you have to meet a client or you have to travel somewhere to a conference that's going to get you more clients. So that struggle is insane, let alone add the medical aspect from your perspective to that as well. And in the beginning, when you first started your business, did you have some things that you wish you had done different?
Yeah, I think I wish I would have invested in working on the business faster, sooner. Because a lot of the things that I did, because this is one of those things where it's more like your hindsight 2020, because I was told no, because I had to stay inside or I was always sickly or in a hospital or something, I wasn't allowed to do the hands-on stuff. And so I don't like the admin. I don't like the computer stuff. I like to be outside. I like to be getting my hands dirty. I like the blue collar and the satisfaction of building something, even when I'm not working on my business. I mean, I built a pool deck around my thing. I'm building remodeling our chicken coop and making a new thing there. Like I have to be doing something. And so it's really hard for me to do the working on it part. However, in the last, I would say 18 months, I've spent more time working on my business than in it. And it has set up the business for so much more success. And I was like, you know, if I would have started this, around the time when I first started hiring, instead of waiting until we are where we are, we probably would have had a whole lot less mistakes. We probably would have held on to more clients and not made as many fatal errors when it came to that, and probably would have kept really good people longer, because I've been told that when employees left, it's just really disorganized and, we need to create this system. It would have been easier to do my job if this would have happened. And now here I am doing that time, building that stuff and all the things that I swore I would never do, like work with technology to build this stuff up, has gone a long way. AI in particular, spending as much time as I have in just learning it and adopting it as fast as I can without it affecting everyday business, that's a big deal. And I wish I would have done that sooner.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the, when I advise my clients from startup to probably 15 employees, I'm always advising them to try to get their stuff in order. From an HR perspective, if you're going to be hiring people, if you're going to be firing people, and then from an accounting and legal standpoint, those are always my first three go-tos. Most people are like, well, I don't need any of the HR stuff yet. I'm not big enough. And I'm like, one employee can wreck you. So I promise you, you need some kind of structure. So I definitely understand that piece. And, you know, even in my own business, when I started, I had the same thing. Like, even being an HR person, I was a little lax on some of the policy procedure and things like that, because I just wanted to get the business moving. And in hindsight, I should have just put all that in place and wouldn't have had to worry about it 2 or 3 years down the road. So I completely agree. Yeah, I think
any percentage, Austin, any percentage towards defense is important. No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with you. Austin, this is a powerful reminder that growth is not just about customers. It's about building systems and standards. We're getting there. And we're going to talk more about that in segment two. So please stay with us on Underdog to Unstoppable. Thanks.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
Welcome back to Underdog to Unstoppable. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. From business to news to lifestyle, culture, innovation, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock whenever you are. Before the break, Austin shared the roots of his journey and how visual installation grew from a commitment to precision into a national installation provider. Now we're going to look at the business side of that journey and how you build a company that delivers consistently when every project, every client, and every market comes with different expectations. So Austin, we were actually talking a little bit during the break about what we both could have done different at the beginning of our business. And we touched on it at the end of the last segment. And I think it's important for us to continue this conversation for our viewers and any potential entrepreneurs that are listening is, you know, there are some things you just need to have in place before you start growing your organization. Would you agree?
Absolutely. There's several things that, you know, everybody focuses just on the service or just on the sales of it. And that is important, but crossing your T's and dotting your I's when it comes to all the boring stuff that nobody wants to focus on at all is critical. The HR, setting up the payroll, making sure you have all of your paperwork aligned and filed properly goes a long ways. And taking the actual time to do that, I can't stress it enough. I mean, you can be 90% on the offense and sales and product and service and all the things and 10% defense, but that defense is a critical piece. You can't just leave that hanging. You know, one person can tank down your whole company by not, you know, making sure that you're protected for sure.
Yeah, there's a few programs that I will take my entrepreneurs to because they're like, I can't afford, right? I can't afford an HR person. I can't afford a payroll company or a PEO. And some payroll companies do provide HR advice and stuff for you. And then you get, well, I can't afford legal, but there's a lot of subscription services now that you can use LegalZoom, SHRM, Society for HR Management are very rare, like really low cost organizations that you can join for an annual membership that will give you some of those items that will help you in that 10% defense. When you now serve all 50 states in Canada, does that mean that you have employees and offices in all of those locations, or is most of your employees remote?
Most of it is our vendors. They're partners that we work with in all these places. We're based in Florida, but I think you nailed it with the smaller subscription or outsource things. That is a major way to be able to build a business without taking on all of those costs so fast. Once you get bigger, you can bring more and more things in house. Absolutely. But in today's world, so many people are either freelance or there are so many smaller things like Bambi, paychecks, other things you can outsource too that are not as expensive as bringing them all in and bringing on all that liability. In fact, that is a major selling point on my own business is I go to all of these manufacturers and designers and be like, look, I can install all of your graphics anywhere in the United States and Canada. In fact, I've even started taking quotes over in Europe, in the Middle East, and some in Asia. And I'm like, you don't have to add to your own overhead of having installation costs if you run it through me. And I can provide that install. You just have to print as much as you want and ship it to the guy, and then we'll put it up over there. And so if you think that, take the same thought process when it comes to the beginning stages of your business, you don't need to take on all that liability that quick. A lot of people freak out over how much money it costs to start. And it honestly does not cost that much, especially if you start as a solopreneur and just grow as you grow. Like, you know, grow your team as you grow. Grow your subscription of the things that you need as the revenue increases. So you don't get ahead of yourself. You know, you can get yourself into big trouble real fast. But do your homework, cross your T's, dot your I's. And there's enough services out there, I feel like it wouldn't be that hard to cover your bases at lower cost.
Oh yeah, absolutely not. And I think from an entrepreneur standpoint and in young companies, like there's so much more available today than there was 10 years ago when I started my business. But some of that mm-hmm. stuff was already there then, but now you have like all of these programs, like you mentioned Bambi, which is very reasonable. It's very reasonably priced for somebody who has less than four people. So tell me, you know, what's next in your growth? You said that you were going in the Middle East and taking quotes in Europe. So tell us a little bit about that and what your growth is looking like for the next few years.
Well, a lot of the stuff we've been focusing on have been still the United States and Canada. It's still where we've been doing, you know, our work for years, and we want to grow that. There's plenty of work to go around. You just got to be in the right place at the right time, talk to the right people. And it's a lot of work to get in those places. But also a lot of the same brands that we work with here have locations over there. And so literally, I think it was a month ago, I quoted something that had well over 100 sites that included Asia, Europe, Middle East, as well as the United States. And it's, you know, we haven't heard back on whether we got it or not, but I checked around, I found the right partners so that I could make that happen. It's obviously a lot harder. There's like, you know, here in the States, we can stay in touch, you know, in real time versus over there, they would be done while we're all asleep technically. And so we would get our pictures and stuff the next day, but it's definitely doable. I mean, they have vehicle wrap locations over there. They have store locations and install graphics over there as much as they do over here. It's just finding the right partners to make it happen. And a lot of that comes down to, obviously, the clients giving a very crystal clear scope of work and having updated information, whether they're getting a site survey so that they know that they're getting the right information or updated information. But, I mean, I want to grow as big as we can. And, you know, work so hard that they can't ignore you. And so we want to be, you know, growing in the industry as much as we possibly can. And, you know, I've been also including the technology as much as I can. And how much can we do with AI without putting that in front of a client? I refuse to let an AI be talking to my client or a vendor. I want people doing that part. But an AI can work in the back end by, you know, doing a lot of different things. As far as administrative stuff goes. So how can you blend both of those things when it comes to, you know, being a blue collar business is just it's a fun challenge, say the least. It's a lot of work, but it's a fun challenge.
So what advice would you give to entrepreneurs that are just starting about building trust? Because it seems as though you've built trust with these major retailers, restaurants, banks, and they come to you because you wouldn't have been able to grow. You wouldn't have been able to do some of the things that you've been so successful at. How does a new entrepreneur build trust? Like, what does that look like?
It is a long process. It is not, a lot of people want the overnight thing. They want it to happen very quickly. And I would argue the only way to do that is by getting someone else who's already built the trust, who's already put in that time to endorse your product or whatever. So I guess for me, it comes back to, as a young entrepreneur, keeping promises to yourself, like, hey, I'm going to get up this early and I'm going to work out every day and I'm going to eat clean, you know, keep those promises for a long time. Okay, now I trust myself to do this and trust myself to do that. You do the same thing when it comes to your clients. You have to make a promise and keep it. And on the times that it doesn't work, so like, for instance, if I say, hey, I'm going to install this graphic on this window at this address on this day, and it doesn't happen, okay, why did it happen? Oh, well, there was a tornado. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that. That is an actual thing that happened with me not that long ago. I was driving through this area. I was like, hey, I'll do this install myself. And I saw the weather was really bad. And about an hour later, I just went past it and went to my hotel. So I was going to be down in that area for a while. And an hour later, I saw on the news that there was a tornado like a half mile from the location I was supposed to be installing graphics. So yeah, okay, you can reschedule. That's fine. If you don't come through and it is 100% in your control, you have to work on the apology and then going above and beyond to make it right and build that trust even more, because your recovery is just as important as doing it right the first time. I wish everything went right the first time. It doesn't always work that way, but your recovery and taking responsibility and making it right goes a long way. One of my oldest clients, I started, as probably my first client that I got. And I did the first year, I only did like $1,000 with them. The next year, I think I did like $10,000 with them. For 4 years after that, it was well over six figures. And, you know, it just grew and grew until they unfortunately went out of business. But you build the trust over time. It doesn't happen very fast. They have to give you a shot. You have to slowly build it.
I tell people all the time, like, I can lose a lot of things, but the one thing I can't afford to lose is my reputation. And when you build such a dynamic reputation in an industry and in whatever you do, it's easy to lose sight of the reputation that you've built. But I get so many things just because of what I've built in the industry. And it sounds as though that's the same for you. You get opportunities because you've built a great reputation and coming through for your clients. Like that's the biggest thing. And knowledge. I find that when you're able to give people plenty of knowledge because they look to you as an expert in the field, I'm sure our viewers are going to really take that. So Austin, we've talked about growth. We've talked about what brought you to this point. In the next segment, we're going to talk about leadership and people. I feel that sometimes being an underdog is sometimes your leadership needs some help. And I want to hear about your leadership journey. So we'll be right back with Underdog to Unstoppable.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
Welcome back to Underdog to Unstoppable. We've been talking with Austin Park, founder of Visual Installations, about the journey from hands-on work to national scale execution. In this segment, we're focusing on the people behind the projects, the installers, project managers, vendors, and clients who determine whether a company simply completes work or builds lasting relationships. It comes down to leadership. And that is what we're going to talk about, because you can have the best business in the world, but if you don't have the people to execute, your business isn't going to go very far. So Austin, tell us a little bit about your leadership style and how you feel of yourself as a leader.
Definitely a lot different and hopefully better than when I first started. I think, you know, looking back at some of that stuff, I wish at how I first started to where I am today, I wish I was more experienced and understood things like I do now. I still have a long ways to go. I think that for any business owner, anybody in a leadership position, that is an ever-evolving, ever-changing, ever-improving piece of personal development and being a business owner or just being a good human, honestly. And you know, the things that you think of just being a, you know, red-blooded American trying to drive forward and all your business stuff, you know, it's really easy to lose track of like the most important pieces of it, like humility. and hearing people, listening, hearing people out, and not just, you know, being the first into the fight. And so it's changing your own mindset behind it, so that you are listening to your employees, you are hearing them out, and hey, they're actually has a different perspective and could help save you from screwing up really badly. So a lot of it's changed over the last 6-8 months, especially. But you know, there are people that are out there that are so good at John Maxwell and Jocko Willink, you know, reading their books about leadership are critical pieces to it. And the humility aspect especially is easily my weakest thing. But over the last 6 months, I would say I'm a whole lot better off on that realm than I used to be. But you know, you have to really focus on, you have to learn. You can't just rely on talent alone. You have to get better at it. Otherwise, all of your good people are going to leave. And then you have no business to lead to begin with, you know? So.
Well, I think part of the humility piece is being okay with being wrong, right? Like, and I think from an employee standpoint, being able to admit like, okay, I didn't handle that well. I didn't handle it the way that I needed to handle it. I apologize for that, but still remains the fact that this was a mess up, right? Or this was something that we could have done better. And I think that in my leadership, that was probably the most important thing for me, was being able to go back and say, okay, yeah, I did not handle that well. It was the heat of the moment. And then learning for yourself later on when those same situations come up, to be able to step back for a minute before you react, before you answer to it. I think humility is huge. There's also, not sure if you know who Pastor Torrey Roberts is. He's with the Potter's House in Texas, but he has a book called The Chosen. And in that book, I think I actually have it behind me somewhere. But in that book, he talks a lot about what we're chosen to do and our purpose, and things of that nature. But he really talks about leadership strategy as well. John Maxwell is phenomenal. He's probably one of my favorite business coaches that I've heard and listened to. What has entrepreneurship taught you about accountability and learning from your mistakes?
Oh man, that's a big Jocko thing. Everything is your fault. Even when your team fails, especially when your team fails, it's your fault. You didn't teach them well enough. You take responsibility, whether it's your fault or not. It just, you have to take extreme ownership. And that's the book that he wrote about that, called Extreme Ownership. And he's a Navy SEAL commander, and he talks a lot about the things that happen in the field of battle, but directly related to business. And so Craig Groeschel is another pastor, good leadership coach as well. I've listened to his podcast a bit. And I think that the humility aspect with the extreme ownership, with the being a sponge, you know, because you're the one person that can't lose their shit. Pardon my language. You have to hear what is happening, absorb it all, and not react out of emotion enough, so much so that you just make the situation worse. This happens quite frequently, especially when it comes to project management. These major brands, they want what they want. They want it done now. They want it done how they want it to be done. And trying to communicate to them the actual situation on the ground is very difficult to do when you have them extremely angry and upset over what's happening, and you have the vendor on site also extremely upset and angry. And it's, I think the way I've almost from the last segment of how I built the trust was, I could speak both. I could speak from the guy on the ground. I spent years, I've been to all 50 states doing installs like this. Me and my German Shepherd started this business just living in my truck, driving to all the places. I can tell them all about carrying a box of graphics, my tools, a chair for my German Shepherd, and holding his leash into all these different places that I had to go, downtown San Francisco, to put these graphics up for the Super Bowl. And I can tell them about all the crazy things it took to park in the middle of New York City and pay an ungodly amount to park and then walk however many blocks with all that stuff with your dog and going through that. But I can also talk about going to small places like Montezuma, Georgia, which people don't even know exist, or whatever, and doing these little stores, because I can speak with authority having done all of those things in all of those places. And because that, I can also speak to the installer now who's going through that and explain the situation to the client who is not understanding that because they're behind a desk. And no offense to them behind being behind the desk. It's just bridging those gaps and having to be the sponge of everybody's anger, but still give the solution to get past the problem. It's a piece of leadership that is very, very difficult to do, especially when you are trying to lead from the bottom, you know, where they're your client, but you're also trying to lead them, in a way to so that they understand how this works in the field goes a ways.
I think the wisdom, right? Like learning through fire or whatever, however you're put to learn your wisdom is pretty interesting. And I think that me over the 20 years of being in my field that I've been in, I try to provide wisdom. And I think the frustrating part to me sometimes is that sometimes when I do give that wisdom and I'm trying to lead from a place of wisdom, because I actually know what will happen if you don't do this, is that they sometimes still don't listen. And I think that it is part of that humility process where you're like, okay, I've told you what I needed to tell you. I've showed you, I've explained it to you. I've provided you with the evidence. I'm just gonna, step back and, I'll accept if this doesn't work out the way that you need to. One thing I wanted to mention to you when you were talking about, when you're angry or, something you have to learn. So my fiance is an elite athlete. And one of the things that I've learned from going through this journey of an elite athlete, especially in the boxing and martial arts and MMA and all of those things, is that you have to control the chaos. And I didn't really understand it, and I could not put it in perspective with entrepreneurship until very recently. When I see all the chaos around and people are looking to you to be calm and controlled and to handle the situation, and that term, controlled chaos, fits entrepreneurship so well. And it just brought me to, what you were just saying about, when you're angry and you're the one that has to hold it all together while trying to, calm everybody, the vendors, all of those things. You also have done a lot of humanitarian work and service with missionaries. How does that help shape your leadership as well? It sounds more like a servant leadership type style.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it John Maxwell that says that servant leadership is the only leadership? I think it was him, but I think it does. I mean, I think a lot of it comes from it gives me a why. Having been overseas in Kenya and Uganda and Ecuador and been in the jungles of Ecuador, the rainforest, as well as the Maasai Mara in Kenya and war-torn areas in Uganda, it gives you a huge why. Even when I first started my company, I remember when I was living in Ecuador and I was like trying really hard to raise money, first of all, so that I could still be there. And secondly, to finish off the project we were building. And I was like, you know what? How much easier would it be if somebody was able to go, oh, you need this built? Here's the money to build it. Instead of having that I spent half my time working and half my time trying to raise money. And I was just like, this is a lot of forth. And so even before, like when I got back to the States, and it was still a few years before I started my company, I was like, this is why I'm doing this. So before I even took money myself from my own company, I was giving it to the people that I was working with overseas. And to this day, we have multiple people that we support overseas. We have multiple compassion kids that we pay for. And it is one of my favorite things to do. And so having a why, it's hard to put into words when you have a why that is that close to your heart. Obviously your family and legacy, those are very critical things as part of your why as well. But having seen the actual war torn places of the world, and the places where people are literally starving or they have literally nothing. And the things that you are helping them with is the most basic thing here. One, you're grateful. And secondly, you have a why. And you take that back and you're able to have more compassion with your own team, I know typically I'm a pretty pretty direct person, and I've had to learn over the years to be much more compassionate about the situations people go through and be that sponge. But you know, it's definitely, I want to take care of my team as best as I can, because when you're a small company and you don't have benefits and as big as these other ones or whatever, what you do have is the more flexibility you have, the more compassion in hearing them out and not just sticking to some corporate speaking point or talking point. And so those are, being a good leader is a critical piece to hold on to good people. And it's taken me a lot of screw ups to get better at that, for sure.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. I mean, that statement in itself is a headline, right? Like, just you have to serve and you have to be a better leader. And sometimes I tell people, like, they need to step out of this country to see just how blessed and how well we have it and how much gratitude we should have, because there's a lot of places that just don't have the abilities and the opportunities that we have here. Austin, your perspective shows that your business can be built on more than transactions. It can be built on people, integrity, and impact. And after the break, we will bring together and talk about the mindset that turns setbacks into legacy.
And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
Welcome back to Underdog to Unstoppable. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast at nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, innovation, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. Before the break, Austin shared some leadership, people, and how service has shaped visual installation and his leadership style. Now we are closing with the deeper question behind every underdog story. What keeps you moving when the pressure is high, the path is uncertain, and the next level requires more than the last one did? So Austin, as we put all this together, and you look back on your journey, what is the one thing that challenged you the most that could have stopped, but instead strengthened you and made you move forward?
That is a very hard choice. There's so many things in that definitely came up as obstacles. And I think the good from the great entrepreneurs are the ones that see, you know, that the obstacle is the way, and that you just push through it. When thinking through the different ones, there's the obviously the early on ones. You know, in 2013, I had been a missionary for 3 years. I had stopped so that I could be a caregiver for my dad. And then after 6 months of fighting cancer, he passed away. And right from that, I didn't really have time to even grieve. I was straight to, like, I had nowhere to live. I had nothing to my name. I had this car that I bought for like $1,500 that I was staying in. And I was just sleeping at people's couches for a couple months until I finally found a job, you know, to try to get myself on my feet. And I had wanted to do this business for so long. And I was just like, the obstacle, like, let's start with eating first, you know, and then you have further on as you move on to a couple of years. Okay, I've been this solopreneur. How do I make this into something bigger? Cause my, you know, I want to make this bigger. And you're like, oh man, I need to actually hire someone. But to do that required a whole slew of things, because I didn't know if I was moving, if I was doing this. And then you have plenty of people that, you know, were like, dude, you're just a redneck from backwoods Tennessee and I have a heart problem. Like, how are you expected to build this? And who do you think you are doing this? And all those questions. And now it's like, oh man, maybe I'm not the kind of person. I have no degree. I've never been to college. Even my homeschool education was more of a, you know, done in the hospital if I did it at all. And so, you know, you have plenty of doubts and plenty of things that pop up every day. And one of my friends, he jokingly says that, you know, some days you give me a six pack, I'd give you the keys. Other days, there's no price I would never sell. So there's a lot of obstacles that turn you into, you know, this refills the driving force, I would say. At the same time, and really the same breath, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but or almost backwards, It's like I never thought I couldn't do it until somebody said, hey, you can't do that. And then you're like, huh, can I? Maybe I can't. And then you're like, well, why not? And so I think whenever someone would tell me I couldn't do it, or someone would make fun of me or tell me I worked too much or whatever it is, I'm like, well, why not? You know, like, why be normal? If they don't have the life I want, why would I hear what they have to say? Not in a mean way, just like that's not the advice I'm going to take, you know?
Well, and you think about it and you go back to the piece where I choose not to stay the status quo, right? I choose not to stay at the same job for 40 years and make minimal money and listen to somebody else for my entire career. Tell me when I can go on vacation, when I can do these things. And so I think it's important for people to understand that no, not everybody's path. Like my parents, that wasn't their path. Or their path. They stayed in their jobs until it was retirement. I chose not to do that, so I became the weird one as well. So I'm gonna jump on that wagon with you. Because there's nothing like freedom and the freedom to make the choices. Because now you can serve when you want. You can do a lot of things that you probably couldn't have done before, or if you were in a 9-to-5. What is your mindset that helped you keep building? Some people it's discipline, some people it's outside motivation. But what is your mindset? Where do you go when it gets tough?
That is almost dependent on the stage of business you're in. I mean, I think at the beginning it was like, hey, I need to eat. And then it was like, oh, this could be something. And sometimes it's the fear of losing. Other times it's the love of winning. I would also say that there's this thing that Tim Grover talks about where it's like the dark side. Your dark side needs to be fed. And sometimes screw that guy is what gets you out of bed in the morning. It's the guy who you do not feel like getting up. You work till midnight, but you got to get up at 4, and the 4 a.m. alarm goes off. And it's that one guy who said, man, who do you think you are? You're never going to make it. And it's like, you know what? Just to prove him wrong, I'm getting up and going to, you know, do your thing. So sometimes it does require you to go into that dark place. And that's a very dark place. I don't talk about it super often. And it's a very hard place to get out of when you're in there, because it is using the negative side of things for sure. But sometimes if that's all that gets you out of bed to execute, whatever it takes to execute is what you got to do. I will caveat that with, you need to be able to get out of that negative mindset and, you know, only go there when you absolutely have to, because you can do some really dumb things in that area as well. But sometimes it is the Compassion Kids pictured on my fridge. And sometimes it is man, that guy said I would never make it. I better work twice as hard today to make sure that I do make it, you know? It depends. It's very dependent on the day and what's going on, for sure.
Also, I want to clarify, I misquoted the name of the book for Torrey Roberts. It's called Knowing, not The Chosen. Different series.
Okay, Knowing.
That was my bad. But I just wanted to point that out, that it's called Torrey Roberts. It's called Knowing, and it's about certainty and leadership and entrepreneurship. So it's a great book. What is success now for you? And what does success look like for you in the future?
I think it's time. Obviously, I would like to have more money, more resources to do more things with more Compassion Kids and more things with my family and whatnot. But I definitely enjoy the time. I like when I have the systems that your systems are always being adapted. But I love when the systems are in a way that things are running smoothly, in a point that it's okay to take a breath for a second. You can take a breath for just a second. But I can serve at my church without being like, oh my gosh, this is going to go wrong. Or I can take a vacation randomly to Mexico because I want to, or go. My favorite place is, I always go to Wyoming. Wyoming is the least populated, most pro-gun state, and I love to just go find a cabin in the Grand Tetons and just be alone for a minute. And when you're able to do that without fearing what's going to happen with the business, that's a win. That's success. I think that's an ever moving thing. Sometimes it does have a monetary number on it. One of my mentors is, he's part of the Three Comma Club. And whenever I go see him, he kind of asked that question, and he's like, and if you say money, he gets so angry. If you say money, if winning is money, winning is everything. There's a Tim Grover again has a book called Winning, and it's talking about when you win, that means your employees are winning, which means their families are winning, which means your families are winning, which means the charity that you're working with is winning. And like winning encompasses everything. And so again, depending on what's going on is dependent on what success is that day, you know?
Success changed for me, right? It went, I always thought success was, you know, having the Three Comma Clubs, all those things. And then I found out that success for me was freedom, freedom to be with my family when I wanted to be with my family, freedom to travel, freedom to do a lot of things. So I agree with you on the time piece. Like it's that's to me is success. And when you can help other people. Austin, for our viewers who want to learn more about you, how can they stay connected? How can they find you? Where can they find you?
Instagram is probably the easy one, a.p.1776. I love communicating with people on there and talking about their different business journeys. I've got to meet a lot of really cool people there. And in fact, that's how I ended up meeting one of my mentors in the Three Comma Club. He and I communicated back and forth on there before we had dinner and stuff. And he's amazing. So I know a lot of people drag on social media, but I have met some of the most amazing business owners and entrepreneurs on there, amazing leaders. And, that's the best place to find me.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us on Underdog to Unstoppable. Your journey has been a powerful example of why I started the show. Refusing to be defined by where you started, building with discipline and integrity, and turning hard-earned experience into something that serves others. To our viewers, remember this, being an underdog is not the end of the story. Sometimes it is the beginning of strength, focus, and purpose that make you unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson, and this is Underdog to Unstoppable.